evening. Welcome to the Inside Scoop, where we bring you all the news from Washington, D.C., that the government and its lapdog supporters in the media don't want you to know about. I'm your host, Mark Levine, and until just a couple weeks ago, I worked on Capitol Hill as a lawyer in Congress, and I was amazed at all the information that we had, we staffers, that was never communicated to the American people, or at least not in a timely fashion. And that's why I'm here on the radio giving you the inside scoop. Topic today, Bush's foreign policy. Can anyone explain it? I hope you can, because I'm having some trouble understanding it. I know all the facts, and I want to discuss them with you, and I want to hear your views here. Here it is. We went to war with Iraq while a dictator in North Korea was busy developing nuclear weapons and has the missile technology to hit Los Angeles. We went to war with Iraq while leaving Saudi Arabia alone. Saudi Arabia, of course, is the country from which 15 terrorists came and killed 3,000 Americans on September 11, 2001. And Saudi Arabia is funding a really severe, perverse ideology, a perversion of Islam that is teaching anti-Americanism, terrorism, suicide bombing. It's funding this, and we're not doing anything, apparently, with Saudi Arabia. But we invaded Iraq, and now, as each of Bush's reasons for invading Iraq fall one by one, you got to ask yourself, was Saddam Hussein our highest priority? Did we have higher priorities, perhaps? And did we go about this war in the right way? Could we have done it in a way that gave us international support so that we'd have support now? I want to hear from you. I want to know your views on what our foreign policy should be. Do you think we should ever go to war as a preventive strike? Do you think we should ever go to war with a country that hasn't attacked us? I want to hear from you. The numbers here are 703-777-1200. Or if you're listening outside the Northern Virginia, Washington, D.C. metro area, you can call our toll-free number, 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. The local number, again, you can call from anywhere, is 703-777-1200. You can also email me at Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com, M-A-R-K at RadioInsideScoop.com, and we have been reading your emails on the air. And we're going to get to your calls and your views on when is it ever proper to go to war. But first, here's the scoop. It's been a hard week for George W. Bush this week. This week marked more deaths of our servicemen in Iraq. You know, it was just a couple of months ago in May when our president flew to an aircraft carrier just off the coast of California. I'm sure you remember it. And it was delaying the return of the servicemen and servicewomen there. But in dramatic fashion, he avoided the traditional helicopter. He took a fighter jet, flew on with a tail hook, and there he gave a speech underneath a huge sign that read, Mission Accomplished. And there President Bush solemnly declared, the war in Iraq is over. It was a perfect photo opportunity, clearly designed to be used in 2004 re-election ads. In fact, I remember they even turned the ship around. They didn't want to show the California coast. They wanted to make it seem like the ship was out at sea. So they turned the whole ship around so that he could, you know, get the right photo opportunity. Well, this week marked a very sad occasion. This week marked more deaths of American servicemen and women since the president declared the war was over than while the war was on in the first place. Now, I don't know how all these people are dying if we're not fighting a war, but we've had more die since the war was over than during the time of the war. And the president, as you know, has been getting a lot of heat for 16 words he said in the State of the Union address. And his defenders are saying, hey, this was just 16 words, so okay, that was a misstatement, that was a lie, the president didn't really read his speech to begin with, he believed it when he wrote it, and actually it's the CIA's fault, and if it's not the CIA's fault, then it's the British fault, and in any case, don't blame Bush, he was just being like, I guess, Ted Baxter, he was, you know, reading the news on the air, and he doesn't have to know what he's talking about. You know, it's kind of sad because there was a photo just recently put out, a reminder that there's a picture of George Bush, and he's working on that State of the Union speech. And I'm sure some photographer took that, again, maybe for a re-election bid, but to show the president hard at work, and you got a picture of him studying that speech with a pen in hand. And now, I don't know whether he just went there to take the photo and wasn't really reading the speech. Maybe that's the case. But either way, you got to wonder, you know, did he read what he wrote? Did he care what he wrote? And his lies about it, you know, George Bush, I'm not your advisor, but they're getting really stupid. I mean, okay, it's one thing to say, all right, the CIA told me to do it, but then you found out the CIA didn't tell you to do it. And then you say, all right, well, we'll just blame the British. We'll say the British said it was true. But you didn't say that, George, right? You said the British have learned it's true. Well, you know, that's kind of different from having said it's true. But I guess it all depends on what the definition of learned is, right? Bill Clinton, of course, he would have told the truth about this, right? He doesn't tell the truth about sex, but he would have told the truth about foreign policy. But your lies are getting worse, President Bush. You actually said last week that the reason you gave the speech in January is because you didn't know that, well, the information was faulty until afterwards. It's just that your own White House has admitted that the White House knew many months before. And in fact, as we've talked about in this program many times, Vice President Cheney sent somebody down there back in February, a year before the January speech, 11 months, sent a very respected former ambassador to find out that the whole thing was bogus. So clearly Vice President Cheney knew. Don't you talk to your Vice President, Mr. Bush? And then he came up with a real whopper last week. One of my personal favorites, because it's such a bad lie. President Bush was asked, why did we go to war with Iraq again? He said, well, don't you remember? We wanted the inspectors to go into Iraq, and Saddam Hussein wouldn't let them in. Mr. President, he did let them in. Now, maybe I'm just delusional, but I seem to remember 2 months ago he actually let the inspectors in. So maybe President Bush doesn't watch the news. Maybe he doesn't know whether or not Hussein let inspectors in, but all Americans sure know. So what is going on here? Why is it that these lies are getting worse? You know, this is a president that doesn't give many press conferences. And I think there's a reason why he doesn't. He doesn't seem to know what's going on here. In fact, the only press conference he seems to be giving are the ones where you got a foreign leader by his side. Because, you know, they do press conferences for other foreign leaders. But he's really having trouble figuring out here what he's supposed to say. He says he had darn good intelligence. Well, I guess at first blush that sounds like a good thing to say, except that, Mr. President, if you had darn good intelligence, and the intelligence officials are telling you the whole thing's bogus, then maybe you should let the American people know they were bogus. Maybe you really need to start blaming people, right? And yet, he says, yes, President Bush says he has full confidence in George Tenet, the guy who he just had take the fall for the bad intelligence. You know, it's a little inconsistent, President Bush. And my question is, why has nobody been fired? What do you think? Do you think people should be fired? The number here is 703-777-1200. Or you can call toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We now know that a guy by the name of Mr. Joseph was the one in the White House. He works for the National Security Council, and he's the one that insisted the information go in. Why isn't he fired? What do you think? Should he be fired? Should Tenet resign? Meanwhile, we have Republicans saying, hey, you know, don't worry about it. It may have been untrue, but don't focus on the untruth. Focus on the fact that the war in Iraq was a good thing, that it made sense. You know, I have a little trouble with that. These are the same people that argued that it didn't matter that the lie was about sex, but the important thing was that President Clinton was lying, and he should be held accountable for it. So I got real problems with that. But actually, even if you look at Watergate, I don't know that the people who broke into Watergate really discovered much about the Democratic Party. I don't know that it was much that they did. What mattered was the cover-up, not what they were actually doing. But let's take them at their word. Let's say that the important thing is, was it right to go to war with Iraq? I want to raise larger questions this week. I want to raise questions about, was it right? Did it make America safer? Or were there higher priorities? And I'm going to get back to that right after this.
Here's a message about energy-efficient Anderson windows from J.T. Hurst & Company. J.T. Hurst, where customer service comes first. different windows can make a big difference in the way you feel about your home. Anderson Windows, with their high-performance, low-E insulating glass, insulate up to 41% better in the summertime than windows with standard dual-pane glass. This means comfort in heat, cold, rain, or shine. Anderson Windows can also help lower your energy bills, and that's bound to give you a good feeling. Stop in and see the full line of Anderson Windows at J.T. Hurst & Company. The pros at J.T. Hurst can locate a contractor to do the job for you or give you some helpful tips on how you can do it yourself. J.T. Hurst, where customer service comes first. On Catoctin Circle in Leesburg, Anderson Windows, long live the home. How many different organizations list you as a member? You might be a member of a sports team, a book club, travel or CD club. But what does that membership really mean? Does membership in a book club allow you to vote on who runs the organization? Can you help shape the long-term future of your CD club? I don't think so. You can, however, shape the future of your electric company. That is, if you're a NOVEC customer. NOVEC, Northern Virginia Electric Cooperative, is owned by the consumers we serve and governed by a board of directors elected from the membership. Pretty cool, huh? But wait, there's more. NOVEC's customers share in the company's profits. Last year, we distributed more than $9.1 million in capital credits to our membership. The power to vote and a share of the profits. Membership doesn't get much better than this. NOVEC, locally based and member-owned. For a list of customer services, answers to your questions, and even employment opportunities, visit our website at www.novec.com. NOVEC. I got the power to move ya.
We're back here at the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're taking your calls, trying to explain Bush's foreign policy and seeing if you can help me out in understanding why we're doing what we're doing. The phone number here is 703-777-1200, or you can call toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. You can also email me at mark@radioinsidescoop.com. And even if you disagree, in fact, particularly if you disagree with me, I want to hear from you. I want to know why you think we went into war with Iraq, and, you know, what do you think it's accomplished, and was it the most important priority for us at that time? Again, the local number is 703-777-1200. Now, I want to make it clear that I'm not saying, by any stretch, that Saddam Hussein was a good guy, all right? He's clearly a miserable dictator. There's no question that 20 years ago he was gassing the Iranians and Iraqi Kurds with chemical weapons and know-how provided by American companies and other countries' companies, with the express approval of Reagan and Bush. In fact, many of us know Defense Secretary Rumsfeld, our very Defense Secretary, traveled to Iraq just a few months after gassing the Iraqi Kurds to establish diplomatic relations between the U.S. and Iraq. At that time, we didn't care so much about the gassing because, after all, we were trying to fight a worse enemy, Iran. But despite Hussein's miserable treatment of his own people, he's really done very little damage of late to the United States. We know now that Saddam Hussein had no significant ties to al-Qaeda, unlike, say, Saudi Arabia, which I mentioned. We also know that Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with September 11th. So the main purpose, the one they keep bringing up again and again, the reason why we went to war with Iraq, according to our president, was to protect America from this imminent threat that Saddam Hussein posed with weapons of mass destruction. Now, putting aside for a moment this very strange phrase, weapons of mass destruction, which I think we really have to think about. Weapons of mass destruction, according to President Bush, is not just nuclear weapons, which are clearly weapons of mass destruction. I mean, one bomb can kill hundreds of thousands of people. But also biological and chemical weapons, some of which are things like mustard gas, which they had in World War I, and sure can do a lot of tremendous damage against civilians, but have really not been successfully used in any large numbers to kill people. In a way that Iraq could use them. I mean, what do we think he was going to do? Did we think he was going to send a missile? Well, Iraq doesn't have missiles that can hit the United States. Did he think he was going to sneak them in through terrorists? Maybe so. And I want you to think about that. If someone could sneak these weapons in via terrorists, and we were convinced that he had them, right? Because Bush said he had these weapons. Where are they now? All right. Either they never existed, in which case there really was no justification to go to war in the first place, or he had them, and now he doesn't have them anymore. Well, then, who has them? Do you feel safer? Do you think he maybe transferred them to another country? Israeli intelligence has said they're in Syria. Others think that maybe terrorists have gotten them. Now, maybe he didn't have them at all. But if George Bush is right and he had these weapons, and if the fear was he was going to somehow sneak them into the United States, aren't terrorists a bit closer to sneaking them in now? Now that we've attacked him? You know, Bill Clinton said, while we had inspectors in Iraq, that we were at least watching him and keeping him from doing more damage. And I fully support sending inspectors back in. In fact, the whole world, remember, supported that. They passed the UN resolution, and they just wanted to give the inspectors more time. My question is not, is Saddam Hussein a good guy? My question is, did our war with him make us any safer? I mean, think about that. George Bush said in his press conference with Tony Blair, he said, quote, "We ended the threat from Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction," unquote. Really? Now, think about this. We ended the threat. Okay, if the weapons weren't there, there was no threat to begin with. And if the weapons were there and he successfully moved them out, how do we end the threat, President Bush? Can anyone possibly explain this? Can anyone justify this? I got a call on the line. I've got Larry in Falls Church. Larry, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi. Mark, I was thinking that this statement by President Bush affected United States credibility. And you said sometime back in one of your previous programs that you used to work for Congress. Why don't we have a congressional investigation of all of this?
That's a very good question, Larry. I appreciate you bringing it up. We have tried, at least the Democrats in Congress, have tried to have a congressional investigation. In fact, just this week, the Republicans rejected a Democratic effort to create a bipartisan commission to probe how intelligence was used or misused in the war effort.
Why don't the Democrats go ahead and subpoena this Joseph guy that you were talking about?
Well, part of the problem is it's a good question, Larry. It's just the way the system works. The Democrats are not a majority, either in the House of Representatives or in the Senate. And to subpoena anyone, to force someone to testify, you got to have a majority. Because only the majority party controls the subpoenas. And interestingly, Alaska Senator Ted Stevens said that he didn't want an investigation, he didn't support subpoenas, because this was all an effort to smear the president. Now, it's very interesting if you think about that, because either the president did nothing wrong, in which case it wouldn't smear the president, it would exonerate the president. He should support a hearing. Or maybe Stevens believes that, hey, the president really did do something wrong, and we are going to discover something there, and that would smear the president. So Stevens, although he didn't say it, sure implied that he thinks Bush did something terribly wrong. Kind of reminds me back during the selection of 2000, you got the Supreme Court decision, Bush v. Gore, and Scalia says, we can't count the votes, because if we count the votes, Gore will win, and that will damage Bush's legitimacy. If Scalia felt that Bush would win, obviously he'd support counting the votes. You don't want to have an investigation when you find out that things aren't going your way.
What about the press? I mean, back in the days when Nixon was doing something wrong, we had the Woodward and Bernstein and all those people going after them. But I don't see the press chasing right now after the president.
Well, actually, I would agree with you 4 weeks ago when I first went on the air and mentioned this forgery. And I mentioned that you may not hear it anywhere else except on the Inside Scoop. And I remember I even got a call from a woman saying, well, Mark, how come you're saying it if no one else is saying it? I think the press actually is going after him now. And I think they have finally caught up on this issue. And, I'm very glad to see that. And I hope they keep up with it. But I thank you very much for your call. One of the things I do want to go into, though, is why and when it's ever important to invade a country, to attack a country that has never attacked us. And interestingly, I think the best reason for this was given by Tony Blair. I watched Tony Blair's speech before the House of Congress, and it was very moving. It was just the kind of president, frankly, I wish we had. He was eloquent, but he spoke with humility, not with the arrogance of George Bush, someone who says, oh, well, they can just, you know, we shouldn't worry about Iraqis attacking our people. Bring them on. That's not the way Tony Blair works. Tony Blair went, and he went systematically, and he talked about why we do the things we do. I'd like to quote from him. He said, "We are so much more powerful in all conventional ways than the terrorists. Yet even in all our might, we are taught humility. In the end, it is not our power alone that will defeat this evil. Our ultimate weapon is not our guns, but our beliefs. And that's what I'd like to move on here to. I'd like to move on to when it's proper. Because I think it is proper to invade a country sometimes when it attacks us, but I think we have to focus on not our weapons, but our beliefs. If we act in a way, and this is really the focus of how I would have our foreign policy, if we act in a way that the world can say, you acted reasonably, you tried to stop something in a reasonable way, America, you did it for purposes of democracy and freedom, I think the world will come around and support us. We had full support in our war with Afghanistan, worldwide. Everyone supported the war. In fact, we had probably the highest world support that I can think of in recent times, because the whole world understood that we were doing what we needed to do. But Tony Blair also said in his speech, he said, I agree it is not the coalition that determines the mission, but the mission the coalition. But let us start preferring a coalition and acting alone if we have to, not the other way around. True, winning wars is not easier that way, but winning the peace is. What America must do, Tony Blair said, is show that this is a partnership built on persuasion, not command. What Tony Blair is saying is we have to persuade the world that our cause is just. And although I guess we don't have to, I mean, we certainly were going to war with Afghanistan no matter what, and sometimes we have to lead the world, but we had the United Nations agreeing to inspections. People need to remember, the day we went to war, that weekend, France was saying, just give us 30 more days of inspections and then we'll support your war. And if we had had the world's support, and don't you think Iraqis, ordinary Iraqis, would be more likely to accept their occupation? Don't you think certainly we'd have less American deaths? We'd also wouldn't be funding this entire thing alone. We'd have the world helping to fund us. So I think that when we act in a just way, with humility and not with arrogance, acting because our cause is just, then I think we can actually achieve some good. And I got to tell you, and this may surprise some of you, I support us acting in Liberia. I think that that actually is a just cause. I think that what we find actually is that Liberia had ties to Al-Qaeda that Iraq didn't have, or at least weren't proven. Samuel Taylor had those ties. And he's a really vicious person. I mean, I don't know what you know about Liberia, but this is a guy, he would cut off children's arms and order them to murder their parents and make a whole army of these mutilated children. Really vicious acts. And this is a guy who invaded a neighboring country, Sierra Leone, much as Saddam Hussein did with Kuwait 10 years ago, took their diamond mines, and then used those to help money launder for Al-Qaeda. And yet this country, Liberia, George Bush, I hope, you know, he's talking a good game. I hope he does go in and help. But he's kind of hanging low, and already the rebels are there. And I think that this is something that we need to lead the fight. We need to show that we can actually lead the fight, not see it as oh, well, we only do it when it's oil involved. We need to do it in Africa, where we can be seen as not racist. And actually, the rebels, I think, are going to take, and they're going to win the day. And it would be really nice to have the United States ahead of that fight, defending American values. So it's not that I'm against war. I'm not a pacifist. I would be very tough with North Korea. I'd be a lot tougher with Saudi Arabia. But was Iraq really, really our primary focus? Why did we go to war with Iraq? And I want to hear from you right after the break, 703-777-1200, or you can call toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Back after this with the Inside Scoop.
Discriminating shoppers throughout the greater Washington, Baltimore area are discovering a new concept in furniture and accessories for the home. Brunelli Home Accents in the Leesburg Corner Premium Outlet Mall. At Brunelli Home Accents, you can browse through a remarkable selection of unique designs, domestic and international, contemporary and traditional. Select a new dining room table by Masterworks, artwork from Artisan House, occasional dining room tables by Butler Furniture, Italian sofas by FCM Divani, light fixtures, mirrors, and imported vases by Josefina, and of course settings for your table by Brunelli. Located at the Premium Corner Outlet Mall on Fort Evans Road, just off the bypass, Brunelli Home Accents has the designs to satisfy the most discriminating tastes. Stop by soon. Open Monday through Saturday, 10 till 9, Sundays 11 till 6. Phone 703-771-6900. Brunelli Home Accents.
There's nothing like home improvement projects.
Yeah? What are you planning?
Something to make our skin softer, clean and easier, laundry softer and brighter. Something that can even lower our utility bills and keep our pipes from clogging.
Really?
And something that'll make our drinking water taste better than ever.
You can do all that in one weekend?
I can do all that in one phone call. Hey, Culligan Man.
For over 65 years, families have been saying, hey, Culligan Man, when they need a trusted water expert. Your local Culligan Man can help you choose the system that's just right for your home. And he backs it with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Right now, get both the Culligan Water Softener and Drinking Water for one low price. Only $9.95 a month for the first 3 months. Enjoy Culligan Water for your entire home and our best offer ever. So trust the water experts. Just call today and say,
hey, Culligan Man.
Improving your water is easy. Call your local Culligan dealer in Dallas today. You can trust the water experts. Dealer participation may vary. Visit Culligan.com for details. Expires August 31st.
We're back here on the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, and we're talking about Bush's foreign policy. Can anyone explain it? And can anyone answer the broader question of when it is proper to go to war with a country that hasn't attacked us? I also have a trivia question for you listeners. I want to see if anyone knows the answer to this. Can anyone call in and tell me what was Osama bin Laden's stated purpose for all his terrorist attacks against the United States? Can anyone tell me what Osama bin Laden said, and I don't mean after the attacks, before the attacks, what was his primary reason for developing Al-Qaeda and for attacking the United States? Does anyone know the answer to that? Call in 703-777-1200. Or you can call toll-free if you're outside Northern Virginia and Metro Washington, 877-57-SCOOP. You can also email us at mark@radioinsidescoop.com. We're now on the phone with John in South Dartmouth. John.
Hey, Mark.
You're on the air. What can I do for you?
First, my wife and I were listening to Fox one night because we were just wanted to listen to what we thought was news. And Sean Hanratty said, well, we know what has happened to some of the weapons. They've been dumped in the Euphrates. Now, my wife and I read a fair amount, and we've never read any articles about the weapons of mass destruction being dumped in the Euphrates. But he said, we all know this has already occurred, yet I've not read anything. And then, secondly, with the controversy brewing over in Britain with Tony Blair and now with the murder of the arms expert, Joseph Kelly, do you think if Blair goes down, that might spark a bipartisan independent investigation here in the U.S.? And then lastly, was it because there were U.S. troops stationed in Saudi Arabia for bin Laden?
That's exactly right with my trivia question. Very good. I'll deal with the last part first. You're absolutely right. The reason why Osama bin Laden has said that he attacked the United States and formed Al-Qaeda was because we had U.S. troops in Saudi Arabia. Interestingly enough, we have removed those troops since the Iraq War. So maybe Osama bin Laden has been successful. He got what he wanted. Think about it. The Bush administration actually did exactly what Osama bin Laden wanted him to do, and I thought that was very interesting. I want to deal with both points you made. One, I haven't heard anything, and I certainly have my sources in Congress and in intelligence services. No one's telling me anything about dumping weapons in the Euphrates. I think Sean Hannity just made that up. But when I say something on the air, I got stuff to back it up. I can give you a source. I'd like to hear Sean Hannity's source. I wish he had sources for what he said. I think if there were any massive dumping of weapons in the Euphrates, I think our satellite photos would have shown it. You know, the Bush administration gave very specific numbers of amounts of weapons of mass destruction. They said there was 500 tons of mustard gas, chemical gas. Now, 500 tons, I did a little math here, that's 1 million pounds. And I don't know how much gas weighs, but I can't think of it, it weighs a lot. I mean, gas you think of as light, right? So how would you house 1 million pounds of gas? You'd have to have some huge structure, I guess, crates. I don't know how you house mustard gas, I admit it. But if 1 million pounds of gas had been thrown to the Euphrates, don't you think we would have found it out? They also said that they had 25,000 liters of some of the liquid materials like sarin and VX. Well, 25,000 liters, let's see, that's about 6,000 plus gallons. Dumping into the water, wouldn't we see dead fish on shore? I have to say, I think that's very unlikely, but if Sean Hannity's got proof, hey, I'd love to see it. In fact, so would President Bush. I think since President Bush is looking for these weapons of mass destruction, Sean Hannity should make a call right to the president and let him know, because obviously our president doesn't know about this, but Sean Hannity does know more, clearly, than all of our intelligence services. So I hope that he will call and inform them about it. What was the other point you made? I'm sorry, you had the second point.
Sorry, I was long-winded, but with the controversy with Blair...
Yes, absolutely, and I'm glad you brought that up. I was really surprised. As you brought up, there was a scientist working for the British by the name of David Kelly, and he's the one apparently who is the source of a BBC story that Blair's claim that Iraq could deploy chemical and biological weapons in 45 minutes... was actually sexed up, quote-unquote. I like that. That's the way only the British can put it. But it was sexed up, that apparently there was just one source, and an unreliable source at that, and they put it in anyway, and apparently it's Blair's right-hand man, Alistair Campbell. And as much as I like Blair's views on foreign policy, I think that he describes it in a way that I wish our president could, frankly. He's in trouble in Britain. As you point out, John, two-thirds of the British public believe Blair hyped intelligence, and 54% in a recent poll said that they don't trust Blair farther than they can throw him. Now, this is the guy who makes the most eloquent case for war. There's no one that makes a more eloquent case. And, you know, it was amazing, really, for me to hear all those Republicans in the House of Representatives cheer this liberal to the left of the Democrats by the name of Tony Blair. But what's interesting is that the reason why the United States first admitted, the White House first admitted that they had used this forged intelligence was right after the British started complaining about it to Tony Blair, because, as Larry from Falls Church pointed out, the press just wasn't focused on this. But the British press, gotta love them, maybe they're freer than ours, I don't know, but they were focused. Their opposition in the House of Commons has more power than our Democratic opposition, and they were focused on it. And, they raised those questions, and only when those questions were raised did President Bush, you know, finally admit that he hadn't told the truth there. So, I don't know. I'd really hate to see Tony Blair go down because of this, but if he hyped the intelligence, then I'd say he has to go as well. I don't know. What do you think, John? Okay, looks like John has hung up. We have another question. Someone on the air. We have Ken from San Francisco. Ken? This is Mark.
Yes,
you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Yes, hi, Ken.
Hi, I love your show.
Thank you.
But I actually disagree with you.
Okay.
Want to get your feelings.
Okay.
When we first went to war with Iraq, when they invaded Kuwait,
right.
One of the reasons that we agreed to a ceasefire to not go into Baghdad was to cover the two no-fly zones and to allow people to check for their weapons of mass destruction. If Hussein didn't have them, he should have let us in, first of all. But they're the ones that violated the truce of a ceasefire, not us. What do you think about that? I just wanted to hear you.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you that, first of all, I think we should have gone to Baghdad in 91. May surprise those of you who've heard me just complain about the Iraq war now, but we already had the troops there. We were already going into Kuwait. Norman Schwarzkopf said, hey, it takes two more days, finish the job. And I got no love with Saddam Hussein. I'd like to see him go. But look at how that situation is different from the current situation. In 91, we had the whole world behind us. We had clear evidence of Saddam Hussein doing bad things, going into Kuwait, doing vicious things there. He probably did have, in fact, we know he had weapons, chemical and biological weapons, not nuclear weapons. We know he had chemical and biological weapons at that point, because from 91 to 98, UN inspectors went in and destroyed huge amounts of them. So there's no question that he had them and that we destroyed a whole bunch of them. In fact, Clinton pointed out that we destroyed more of them after the first Iraq war than before the Iraq war. So I'm going to agree with you that we should have finished it in 91. The question is, should we then have taken all these American troops, gone in at a time when the world didn't support us, go in when we got this, and again, people, we're now finding out more and more about North Korea. I got to tell you, those of us that worked in Congress, we knew Kim Jong-il was developing nuclear weapons, and we knew that the Bush administration was playing that down, actually playing down a real threat to you, Ken, I'm sorry to say, in San Francisco, because he can hit the West Coast, Kim Jong-il, and they were playing that down. And not talking about the war with Iraq. So it's not that I don't want to see Saddam Hussein gone. I'm glad he's gone. But I would have liked to see the whole world help carry the burden. And frankly, I think we had higher priorities. I don't know. What do you think, Ken? You still on the air?
No, I agree that at least right now it looks like North Korea's a bigger enemy. But I still have to disagree. We said we're going to stop going to war. We won't invade you anymore because you'll agree to these concessions. They backed out, and we should have, I frankly thought that we should have even gone in earlier. The bad thing is I wish that we didn't link Iraq with September 11th. It doesn't seem, has there been any link to them so far?
None whatsoever. And in fact, all the links that that Bush has said have been proven to be false. They found like one Al-Qaeda messenger, not even Al-Qaeda operative. There was one messenger who was in the Kurdish-controlled area of Iraq, and anyone that knows the situation knows that they're not Saddam Hussein's friends. They're his vicious enemies. And that's all they could find, and they were hyping that as, oh, well, there are operatives in Iraq. Frankly, there are more operatives in Canada, and I don't support invading Canada right now. But I want to raise your other point. I want to make clear that I don't think we disagree. Maybe you think we do. I agree that we should have gone in 91. I agree that after we'd gone to all that trouble, And Schwarzkopf said we were 2 days away from Baghdad, we should have gone in. Another reason we should have gone in 91 is we had the people's support then. We had a Shiite uprising. We had a Kurdish uprising. And one of the reasons I think we should go in Liberia is when you have people's support, it's an entirely different war. It's the difference between Kosovo, which I think was a just war, and Vietnam, which I think was an unjust war. When the people see you as liberators, then it's terrific for us to be there to help people form a democratic government, to help get rid of the people that are ruining the peace. But when people see you as occupiers, as they did in Vietnam, as I'm afraid more and more are doing so in Iraq, then I don't think the war is just. So I don't think it's inconsistent for me to say that I did support and I wanted us to finish the job in 91 and not to do it again now. Because we let him go this time, and then he really, 91 to 98, the inspectors destroyed a lot of weapons. Interestingly, in December 98, when he kicked out the last inspectors, maybe then we should have ratcheted up the pressure. Maybe then we should have insisted the inspectors go in, and if not, threaten war. We know now that had we done that, he would have let the inspectors in when we threatened war. Interestingly, at that time, I remember very clearly, Clinton was actually sent airplanes to bomb some places in Iraq in 98, December 98. And Republicans argued that Clinton really wasn't trying to stop anything in Iraq. He was just trying to take the nation's attention off of what really mattered, the scandal with Monica Lewinsky. And they complained bitterly that he was trying to turn this thing with Iraq into something, more important than his Lewinsky scandal. And everyone could see that Saddam Hussein had started. He's the one that kicked the inspectors out. And I think, frankly, if the impeachment scandal hadn't gone on and Republicans hadn't made such a big deal out of that, they could have at least said, all right, Clinton, we don't trust you, but we support you going after Iraq. But the Republicans didn't want to go after Iraq at that time, so, he kicked the inspectors out. I think that had we left the inspectors in, let them do their job, and then if Saddam Hussein was shown not to be cooperating, then we could have had this war with the whole world's support. We wouldn't have had to cost as much money or men or women. And we also, could have focused on some real, real dangers to our security in Europe. I don't know. Do you agree, Ken? What do you think?
No, actually, when you bring it up like that, it does make a lot more sense. And seeing what we're seeing now, I actually thought that we'd have a lot more support from the Iraqi people. But it doesn't. I'm sure the majority probably do support us. But with all these Americans being killed, all the soldiers, it really is hard to be behind it. We don't want our own troops to be killed.
I'm sorry?
Well, I was going to ask you if you think Iran is as big of a threat as well.
I do. And in fact, interestingly, the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Association, I'm not sure what that SA stands for, said that Iran is developing nuclear threats. In fact, they mentioned Iran and North Korea as the biggest threats. And again, we're doing nothing largely because Bush went to war with Iraq claiming nuclear. I mean, it's interesting. I've heard that the real problem is we're crying Wolfowitz. Many know Paul Wolfowitz, assistant secretary under of defense under Don Rumsfeld, and he's the one who very much supported the war with Iraq. But we're crying Wolfowitz. We're saying, oh, Iraq is a terrible nuclear threat. We're going to go in, and then it turns out Iraq is no nuclear threat at all. Then the world doesn't believe us, just like the boy who called Wolf, right? And then, when there is a serious threat from North Korea or Iraq or something else, then, you know, then no one will believe us. And so I think that poses a real problem.
What kind of threat can we do against Iran or North Korea to stop them? We can't go to war now because we'll look like an imperialistic country. Is there anything that you could think of that we should probably do to maybe curb more nations getting nuclear weapons?
I don't know if you heard, Ken, I just gave the Gore sigh. I think that was...
Oh,
that
you know what? We were having trouble getting it.
I think, well, first of all, I think we should have done more to begin with. It's hard. We have a boy who cried wolf, but now there really is a wolf, and it's attacking our sheep. I mean, you in San Francisco, you are in danger. And I think we should do with North Korea what I advocated, frankly, 6 months ago, which is be very tough with them and even threatening war. My view, and I said this to some people in Congress, I don't know if they listened to me, but I said it, is that we should, first of all, we should make sure South Korea has nuclear weapons. I know that's a very strong thing to say, but they used to have nuclear weapons, interestingly, until President George Bush Sr. took them out. And then, it's true. And then what I would do is I would make a deal with Kim Jong-il, and I'd say, you remove yours and stop your production, allow inspectors, and we'll remove ours from South Korea and stop production, allow inspectors.
Okay.
And I think he'll take that deal because I think that these dictators are not crazy. People talk about crazy dictators. I don't think Kim Jong-il or Saddam Hussein was crazy. I think they simply want to maintain power, and they're vicious enough to do that. And I think...
They aren't illogical. They're maybe maniacal, but not illogical. They want to do what they think is going to be best for them.
Exactly. I think that's exactly right. And yes, if we have to, after that point, if he refuses, I'd bomb his nuclear plants. So I can be a real hawk when it comes to a real threat to the United States. I just think that this whole focus on Iraq, exactly, the world is not going to believe us, and that's, again, part of the problem with Bush's policy. But I really appreciate your call, Ken. We're going to go to a commercial.
We love your show out here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ken, for listening all the way out in California.
Thank you. Bye.
We're going to go to a commercial now, and after that commercial, we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in Congress to try to investigate this, what the Republicans have done and what the Democrats have done to try to investigate this and why the president doesn't really want this investigated. Back right after this.
Save money this month when you buy a pre-owned vehicle from Jenkins Nissan in Frederick during their June clearance sale. They've sold a lot of new Nissans, which has caused an overstock of great pre-owned vehicles. So now's a great time to pick up a pre-owned vehicle at Jenkins Nissan in Frederick. Each pre-owned vehicle and truck at Jenkins has to pass a 106-point quality check and a Maryland inspection. And on top of that, most vehicles have a 12-month, 12,000-mile limited warranty. You can choose from imports and lots of late models, with many priced under $10,000. So hurry in for the best deal around on a pre-owned vehicle at Jenkins Nissan of Frederick during their June clearance sale. Jenkins Nissan at the corner of East and 9th Streets. You're going to love their style. Visit them at Frederick.com or preview the selection of vehicles online at JenkinsMotors.com.
Jenkins Nissan, you're going to love it. You're going to love our style.
You know, I'm not a doctor, but I play one in this commercial. And if there's one thing I know, it's this. Traffic lights, traffic jams, and Sunday drivers can give you a driving headache. That's why I recommend Traficin, the little fuchsia pill in the SUV-shaped bottle. Just pop a Traficin before your morning commute on...
Hey, hold the meds, Doc. There are a lot of ways to relieve the headaches of Loudoun County traffic, but the smartest remedy is to avoid it altogether on the Dulles Greenway. You can drive from Leesburg to Dulles in about 15 minutes, 65 miles an hour the whole way. No traffic lights, no traffic hassles, no pounding, throbbing, pulsating, well, you know. It may even help clear up those nasty little worry wrinkles on your forehead. And for less than a bottle of extra strength aspirin, the Greenway is the cheapest stress reliever around. Oh, one warning. Driving the Greenway can be habit-forming. The Dulles Greenway. Don't Don't stress, just drive.
We're back here at the Inside Scoop, taking your calls, trying desperately to explain Bush foreign policy. And I'd like to hear from some of you conservatives out there. Can anyone defend this? I mean, why do we go to war with Iraq and we're not going to war with North Korea? North Korea has recently said that they're going to give arms to terrorists. They actually have admitted this. And we're not doing hardly anything there. Why is that? Why are we threatening so much? Now, some will say it's oil. And that may well be true. It may well be that it's all about oil. You know, certainly it's done very well for Halliburton, Cheney's old company, and their contracts. But I have to think that American policy has to be more than oil. In fact, one of the most interesting theories I've heard for why we went to war with Iraq at all is that it had really not much to do with oil, but it had to do with the fact that we never finished the job in Afghanistan. We never found Osama bin Laden. And the theory goes something like this. If you got a family and they got three brothers, all right, and big brother picks on middle brother, and middle brother gets really, really upset at being picked on, what does he do? He gets angry and he picks on his little brother. Maybe some of you in families have seen this. And it's not the little brother's fault, but George Bush, he messed up royally. I mean, let's just face it. In Tora Bora, we messed up royally. We did not have enough troops there on the Pakistani border to get this mass murder, Osama bin Laden, who escaped, you know, through our vice. So we didn't have that, and he got out, and that looked really bad for George Bush, and he's running for re-election, and he's got to have something, right? So he goes out, and he says, well, let's find an enemy. Saddam Hussein, he's somebody that people know of. What's interesting to me about this whole thing is I remember back in 1990 when I knew who Saddam Hussein was. I knew we were aiding the guy in his war with Iran. I knew he was vicious. I remember back in 81, even, I'm old enough to remember that as a kid, when Israel destroyed a true functioning nuclear weapon reactor of Iraq, and the Reagan administration condemned Israel for this preemptive strike. How far we've come. The point is that sometimes you really do have to attack. Sometimes you're fighting for your own survival. And so if you're doing that, of course you have to attack, and of course you can't wait for a coalition. And that's what Israel's doing. But when you get to the United States, we weren't fighting for our survival. We were fighting Al-Qaeda for our survival, not Iraq. You know, I divide the world's threats into two categories. Some are too powerful for us to deal with right now. China is no good. Don't get me wrong. What they did in Tiananmen Square was awful, and they don't let their people have freedoms. But we can't attack them. They're a very powerful country. They have nuclear weapons. And then there are countries that pose a threat but are relatively minor. Say, Gaddafi. Gaddafi did kill some Americans in the 80s, but he's laid relatively low since then. Now, do I like Muammar Gaddafi? I don't. And would I like to see him go? I would. But I think that Gaddafi is a lot like Saddam Hussein. You know, we've got, Madeleine Albright wrote an article recently. She said we have 25 countries that are busy developing nuclear weapons, not weapons of mass destruction, not this chemical, biological mustard gas that was used in World War I, but serious nuclear weapons. Now, I don't think we can attack them all. People think we're overextended now. I think it would be hard for us to attack them all. We have to persuade. We have to do what Tony Blair said. We have to show, we have to have a partnership, he said, built on persuasion, not command. We have to persuade people that our cause is just. Why do we have all these groups that are now seeking to take down America? You know, right after the Cold War was over and America was the sole superpower, really the world largely acquiesced, largely supported that. And I think that's because we were recognized as a country that after World War II, we didn't, you know, we occupied Germany and Japan just long enough to let them control their own lives. We did the Marshall Plan. We believed in democracy. We believed in letting people take control of their own lives. One question that Ken raised that I should have answered, that I'm going to now, is the one of whether Iraqis support us there. And it's a tough question. There were some Iraqis, largely exiles, that were around that statue of Saddam Hussein knocking it down. What a lot of people don't know is that there was only about 150 there, and troops controlled the perimeter, and those Iraqis, we didn't let all Iraqis go in, just the ones that supported what we were doing. But right now, we've formed a government where the majority in the government is Iraqis out of exile. I think that's a problem. I would, because then I think Iraqis see it as an occupying force. And I think we really have to focus way back to what happened on September 11, 2001, right? Remember what they did. They used our own planes and attacked our World Trade Center. And as I said from my very first show, you can check the archives, right now, the most serious threat to our nation isn't Saddam Hussein. It isn't a fear that they're going to somehow import these chemical weapons. We have chemical weapons in the United States, and they're called chemical plants. We have nuclear weapons in the United States, and they're called nuclear plants. And right now, because Bush has taken all this money from Homeland Security and put it into his tax cuts for the ultra-wealthy, our own chemical and nuclear plants remain practically undefended. Don't worry, right? Terrorists like Al-Qaeda will never think to use our own chemical and nuclear weapons to harm us. That would be too clever, right? Driving a truck into a chemical plant? They'll never think of that. That'd be like hijacking our own planes. Come on. This is a severe danger. And one of the things the Democrats did in Congress just this week is they had a plan to reduce Bush's tax cut. What they wanted to do was everyone that makes more than $1 million is going to get at least $88,000 a year in the Bush tax cut. The Democratic plan was to reduce that for millionaires, people who earn $1 million a year, to reduce it from $88,000 to $83,000. And that would provide $1 billion to spend on protecting us, protecting our chemical plants, protecting our nuclear plants from what really is the threat to our national security. The Republicans said no. They thought that millionaires should get $88,000, not $83,000, and that crucial $5,000 per millionaire was too important to protect Americans from a real vicious terrorist attack. The Republicans also rejected a Boxer amendment in the Senate to simply do an accounting. All she asked for was not a change in policy. Let's just do an accounting for the costs in Iraq, the personnel, the contributions by other countries, and the contracts in excess of $10 million. Contracts like the one that Halliburton got with no review, with no test to see who was providing everything for the best price. Republicans said no. The other thing you should know is that the commission that the Democrats insisted on to investigate what happened on September 11th, the Republican chairman of that commission, former Governor Tom Keene, said that the administration's refusal to allow witnesses to be interviewed without minders amounted to intimidation. Now, I want you to think about this. Does this remind you of anything? Think about this. Weapons inspectors that aren't allowed to talk freely without minders. Sure, that's what happened in Iraq. And the administration today is not cooperating with the commission to find out what happened on September 11th. They're insisting that anyone that speaks to the commission on September 11th cannot speak freely. They can only speak with minders. Somehow, I don't think this is the persuading by democracy and freedom and openness that Tony Blair talked about. So that's the end of this week's Inside Scoop. I hope you tune in next week. We're going to turn away from foreign policy and talk about the economy. We have the largest budget deficit in American history, going from the largest budget surplus just a few years ago. We're going to talk about how that deficit happened and does it really damage the economy. The other thing I want to give you the inside scoop on, and you'll have to wait till next week to hear it, is how things really work in Congress. How does a bill get through the House of Representatives? In two words, the answer is Tom DeLay. That's right. No bill goes through Congress unless Tom DeLay says okay. Why is that? You'll have to tune in next week on the Inside Scoop, and we'll find out why. See you next Sunday.
AM 1200 WAGE, Leesburg.